Welcome back to WIL AM 580 Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We've got a live show coming to you today from our studio in Campbell Hall. And we're going to be talking about advertising. And we're going to be talking about its effect on society and what a lot of people are saying about it and doing about it. And our guest is one of the most noted critics of advertising around today. He is Colly Lassen. He's the co-founder with Bill Schmaltz of Adbusters, the magazine I think many of you are familiar with. It's also a global activist network working to catalyze a major shift in the way we lived. It offers incisive philosophical thrust as well as activist commentary from around the world, addressing issues from sustainable consumption to genetically modified foods and to media concentration. In addition to co-founding this organization, Colly Lassen has spent the last 13 years editing and publishing Adbusters magazine, which is the flagship of the organization. Adbusters is responsible for such social marketing campaigns as Buy Nothing Day and TV Turnoff Week, and they are fighting legal battles for the right of public access to the airways. Colly Lassen, welcome to Adbusters. Welcome to Media Matters. Are you there, Colly? Hello? We're still working on our connection here to get Colly on with us. He's on our line, but our engineers are working on it. Colly, are you there? Well, while we're working on getting Colly here, let me just tell you quickly what is coming up in the next 2 weeks on Media Matters. Next week's show we're going to have as our guest one of our longtime and favorite guests, John Stauber, the editor of PR Watch and an author, a critic of media. And John is going to be joining us to talk about his new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, which is about the war in Iraq and the public relations campaign by the government to push the war in Iraq. And John will be here to talk about that live from Madison. The book has just come out. It's already won a lot of acclaim, a new review in the San Francisco Chronicle just today, London Guardian as well. So we'll be talking with John Stauber 1 week from today. Is Colly Lassen, you there, Colly?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad we finally were able to get the connection so you could join us here on Media Matters. It's a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be on your show because actually you've been a bit of a hero of mine for a long time. You got me introduced into the politics of the mental environment, and as you know, we call our magazine the Journal of the Mental Environment, so I'm very glad to finally talk to you.
Well, yeah, likewise. Why don't, for some of our listeners who are not familiar with Adbusters magazine and your group Adbusters, why don't you just tell a little bit about how long has Adbusters been around? What's the magazine like?
Yeah, we've been around for over 10 years now. And I think it's kind of interesting the way we started, that we were born because we tried to buy some airtime here in the Pacific Northwest in a battle we had with the forest industry. And none of the stations here would sell us any airtime for a 30-second spot that we wanted to air. And it was out of this outrage, you know, at not being able to buy airtime when the forest industry was actually buying $6 million worth of airtime. It was this realization that there was no democracy on the airwaves that gave birth to our whole organization and everything we've done since.
In the magazine, Adbusters has been around for 13 years, and I've been reading it since it first came out. It's 13 years, right, Colly?
1989, you're right, yes, okay. 13 years.
Going on 14. And for people who have not seen the magazine, what does an edition of Adbusters look like?
Well, at the moment, it's a very slick-looking magazine. It's usually about 100 pages. As I said, we call ourselves the Journal of the Mental Environment. We're like a networking magazine for culture jammers. The basic premise of the magazine is that we, the people, have lost our voice, that it's now advertising agencies and corporations and all kinds of other people who are spoon-feeding our culture to us top-down. And we need to have a sort of a culture-jamming movement that gives the voice back to the people. And the magazine is a very edgy, rambunctious, combative kind of a journal that tries to rejuvenate some of these juices that I think that we have lost over the last generation or two.
And what sort of features would someone find if they picked up a copy of Adbusters? What sort of material is in the magazine?
Well, we have some articles written by some of the big thinkers of our time. We have a whole bunch of spoof ads. We launch a whole bunch of campaigns in the magazine. Buy Nothing Day, TV Turnoff Week, were both launched 10 years ago in Adbusters. And we're basically culture jammers, just looking every which way we can to, you know, get the mainstream consumer culture to bite its own tail. You really have to look at the magazine. It's very hard to explain on the in a voice what this magazine looks and feels like.
And people can go online if they want to sort of size things up before they don't have a chance to look at the magazine in the short term. They can just go online at adbusters.org. Is that
right? That's right. Yeah, we have quite a popular website. We call it the Culture Jammers headquarters, and you can get a taste of what the magazine is like by going to that website.
Now, you've used the term culture jammers. You've been on the air 3 minutes, and we've used the term 11 times.
I think that's
That's an all-time terminological record for Media Matters. What is culture jamming for those who are unfamiliar with the term?
Yeah, well, culture jammers are people who have a visceral dislike for what our culture has become, the fact that we have moved from an authentic bottoms-up culture to a sort of an inauthentic top-down consumer culture, and that so many of us aren't really people with opinions and feelings anymore. We've become consumers. And the basic feeling is that all the old movements, the Black Liberation Movement, the feminist movement, the environmental movement, that these movements have now run out of steam. Many of them, of course, have succeeded to some degree. And we culture jammers feel that we need a new movement now, and that movement has something to do with culture. It has to do with the right to communicate and the right of access and with media monopolies and the whole politics of our information age.
Great. We're talking to Colly Lassen today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you'd like to call in and ask Colly, who is the co-founder and editor and publisher of Adbusters magazine, the number here is 333-9455, and our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Colly, let me ask you a question about advertising. I mean, your magazine's premised on a strong criticism of advertising. What do you say to people who say, look, advertising's good, it makes products cheaper, it makes the good life available to people who for, you know, centuries have lived in poverty?
Yeah, well, many people make a mistake about us. They think that we hate advertising. Actually, of the 20 people that work in our office and all those other hundreds of people who are sort of freelancing on the periphery, most of us love advertising, and we have no problem with advertising, except for the fact that there are two kinds of advertising. There is the selling of products. There's product marketing and having ads for those, and then there's social marketing. There's selling ideas, and we are into that second smaller component of advertising called social marketing. And at the moment, the problem we have with advertising is that product advertising occupies 99.9% of the advertising spectrum. And when it comes to selling ideas or social marketing, then we don't even have the right to walk into our local stations and buy airtime for our social marketing messages. I've been trying to buy airtime for our Buy Nothing Day TV spot for the last 10 years on the ABC, CBS, and NBC networks, and also lately Fox and MTV. And they have, for over 10 years, repeatedly, consistently refused to sell us airtime. So the problem we have with advertising is that it's not a free marketplace of ideas, that that corporations can go in there and pretty well buy airtime for any kind of ad they like. But we culture jammers do not have the right to communicate. We do not have the right to buy airtime, and that really bothers us.
When you go to one of these commercial networks like NBC or ABC or Fox, trying to purchase an ad, which Buy Nothing Day, which basically tells people not to buy anything, and is critical of sort of consumption society. What reason do they give you? Do they have an explanation for why this, or do you just get a form letter back?
Well, quite often lately, it's just a form letter saying that somehow our spot doesn't live up to their standards in some way. But I've talked for hours and hours with these TV network executives, and I've said to them, well, come on, what's the matter with you guys? You know, this is a democracy. I've got the money to buy some airtime. I've got something fairly important to say. Why don't you sell me some airtime? What's your problem? And they say to me, listen, Mr. Lassen, you've got a lousy $15,000 or $25,000 to spend on a campaign. We've got sponsors here that are spending millions of dollars, and we're not going to risk pissing them off because of your lousy $15,000 campaign. And so there's a front face and a back face. At the moment, our current television environment cannot stand dissenting voices.
Now, would you be perfectly content with our television environment if they were willing to sell you ads? Would that satisfy you, or do you have a bigger critique of our television environment?
No. I think that TV Turnoff Week and winning a legal First Amendment action against the big networks and winning the right in this information age of ours to buy airtime, I think these are just the first steps. And then after that, I think after we have the ability to buy airtime and we are going head on head with some of the big corporations of our time, and 1 minute McDonald's comes on and says go out and have a Big Mac, and we suddenly come on 3 minutes later and say 52% of a Big Mac is fat, and once you start having these kind of media wars, then I think that the people will get a taste for something more, and they will say, now hold on a second, these are public airwaves. Why can't we get a couple of minutes of those airwaves, back for our own voices? And then maybe we'll have a bit of a two-minute media revolution where people will say, well, let the programmers and the corporations with their ads, let them have 58 minutes of every hour, but let us have 2 minutes for what we have to say. And then I think after that, maybe people will get together and say, well, we don't really like this TV station that is running in our city. It doesn't give us all the information we need during elections, and it's got too much sex and violence and too much clutter in it. And why don't we as a city, as a community, have a little bit more input into the way our television stations are run? And then finally, I think people, once they get involved in the politics of the mental environment like that, then they will get to the point when they will say, now, the kind of media monopolies we have running our mass media today have really gotten out of hand. We reached a point where half a dozen of those huge companies like AOL, Time Warner, and Disney, and four or five others, are now controlling over half of all the news and entertainment flows around the planet and around our country as well. So let's have some antitrust actions and let's break those monopolies down. And then, if I can just say one more thing.
Sure, go right ahead.
And then, on a visionary level, on a really large level, I think people will bit by bit realize that the mental environment is one of the most precious things that we have. In some way, it's even more precious than our physical environment, because if our mental environment is polluted, and if we the people don't control our own mental environments, if we don't find ways of talking to each other in a clean way, if our mental environment is polluted, then we won't even be able to make wise decisions about the physical environment, and we won't even be able to control our own future. And I think that over the next few years, they will build a media democracy movement. Some people call it a mental environmental movement. And this movement will demand a basic human right for in this information age of ours, and this is called the right to communicate. And this right to communicate is one step higher than the freedom of speech or the right to hold opinions or the right to stand up in a street and talk to the people passing by. This right to communicate includes the freedom of speech, but it also includes the freedom of access.
We're talking to Kali Lassen today, our guest on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Kali Lassen is the co-founder and the editor and publisher of Adbusters magazine, which I think many of our listeners are familiar with. We're talking about Adbusters, his work as a culture jammer, addressing advertising and commercialism in our society. What's the circulation of Adbusters?
Since the battle in Seattle, it has grown wildly. We are now 125,000 copies worldwide. We have 15,000 copies even going to the UK now and 3,000 or 4,000 going to Australia. But 70% of our market is in the U.S.
That's phenomenal. We've had many editors and publishers of independent magazines on the air, and I think that's a real success to have over 100,000 circulation for a magazine like Adbusters. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's surprised us too, but I think somehow activism, especially media activism, became kind of cool after the battle in Seattle, and that wave that's been swirling around the planet has sort of carried us forward.
Can Adbusters support itself on subscription? I don't think you get a lot of advertising in the magazine.
Well, we get a lot of phone calls from ad agencies who want to buy some space on our magazine. But when we start asking them, you know, what's the ad, and then they usually don't want to talk to us after that. Can you ask that question again?
Sure, I'd be glad to call. I mean, how does the magazine able to pay for itself just on the subscriptions, or do you get other sources of revenue?
Actually, no. We have a very high sell-through. About 60, 70, 80% of our magazines are actually sold, which is about 30% above the magazine average. And we actually support ourselves totally by newsstand sales and by subscriptions. So we are very, very unique in that way, because the paradigm of magazines for the last couple of generations has been that there is no way that you can launch a magazine without advertising. But we have proved that you can.
We're talking to Colly Lassen again. If you'd like to call in and ask a question to Colly Lassen, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. Colly, we've been talking about the United States a lot, and you said 70% of the circulation is in the United States, but Adbusters and you are based in Vancouver, British Columbia, is that right?
Yes, we're here in Canada, yes.
So, I mean, is the situation in Canada the same as the United States? I mean, is commercialism, advertising pretty much at a similar level as it is in the U.S.? Are they interchangeable, or are there some distinctions between the Canadian situation and the U.S. situation?
Well, in a cultural sense, I think you can walk across the border and hardly feel a difference. You can switch on your TV and it'll feel like pretty much like the U.S. And you can go to a newsstand and the magazines are pretty well the same as the ones there. But there are some quite profound differences once you look a little deeper. For example, when the Iraq War started, then about 80% of the people in Canada were actually against that war without United Nations backing. And in fact, the whole rest of the world, it was roughly the similar levels. It was about over 80% of the people were against it. And yet, in the United States, when the war started, it was almost the opposite. It was 75%, 80% who were for the war. So that is a very, politically, that's a very profound difference. It makes me wonder about whether the media environment, the information environment in the U.S. is not somehow being systematically distorted, or what is going on? What explains this incredible difference between the way people feel in the United States and the way the people feel in the rest of the world?
Now, you talked about how you're concerned about breaking up the big media companies, and those certainly are all U.S.-based companies or significantly involved in the U.S., not Canadian-based companies. Are you working with the Canadian government to have them change stuff, or American government? Are you working across borders? So what is your political program?
Well, actually, we have been trying to make as much fuss as we can about the fact that at the moment a Canadian citizen, an American citizen, does not have the right to walk into his or her local TV station and plonk some money on the table and say, you know, give me 30 seconds of airtime, I've got something to say. And I think bit by bit, people are getting outraged by this. I think that people feel that if you've got the money, then you have as much right to buy airtime as you know, McDonald's or any other company. So I think that over the last 13 years of Adbusters, you know, we culture jammers have raised this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there is actually a bit of a climax that may be happening this December. There's for the first time in my memory anyway, there's an information summit happening in Geneva on December the 8th. And this is a little bit similar to the Rio Plus 10 conference that happened in Johannesburg last year. But this is not about the physical environment, it's about the mental environment. And
mm-hmm.
For this particular conference, we will be going there with a special issue of Adbusters and with a lot of information that shows that all around the world, in the United States, in Canada, in Australia, in the UK, in France, in all these countries that we've tried to buy airtime over the last 10 years and have been rebuked, that we don't even have the, you know, quite apart from all these other issues that are being talked at the conference about spam and all these other technical problems that are involved with the internet and so on, that we're going to go there and point out that we don't even have, as a people in the world, we don't even have the right to buy airtime on commercial stations. So we're at the very, very early stages of having any kinds of rights or freedoms in this information age of ours. And we hope that this 13 years of work that we've done in this field will suddenly hit a climax there this December.
Yeah, this is the World Summit for the Information Society that you're referring to that's taking place in Geneva. In fact, here on Media Matters, we will have a program this fall prior to the World Summit to take up those issues in detail, because you're absolutely right, Kali Lassen. That is going to be a very historical moment in recent history, talking about the Information Society. And
well, you know, potentially I think it is a historic moment. But I've also been checking out some of the websites there and some of the groups and people that are going there. And initially, I must admit, I'm quite disappointed. It feels like that, like a lot of that same old kind of lefty rhetoric that hasn't gotten us very far over the last 20 years. And
like, what sort of lefty rhetoric?
Well, you know, my gut feeling is that you know, we the media activists of the last generation or two, you know, that we have been, you know, we are always reacting. You know, for example, that FCC ruling recently was a perfect example where all of a sudden something terrible is happening at the FCC and they're going to make the size of those monopolies even bigger. And then all of a sudden the media activists, you know, us lefties, we come out of the woodwork and we say, that's terrible, we have to do something about this, and we react. And my problem with the progressive left is that we never proact anymore. We're always reacting, you know. We you know, instead of pulling legal actions and trying to break down these media monopolies and winning this right to at least buy airtime in our countries and talking about the right to communicate and doing all these other things, all we ever do is just react to what the other side is trying to push down our throats. And I'm tired of it. I'm ready to jump over the dead body of the left.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's this part of being on the left, or is that just the fact that the side has lost so much and been on the defensive so much that it doesn't have much of a vision? Because the left traditionally is known for having, probably of all political actors, the one that has the most dramatic vision and the most radical vision for a different world.
Yeah. Well, I think that something strange happened to us after the fall of the Soviet Empire. I feel that up to then, you know, we were energized and we did a lot of good work, and I was proud to call myself a lefty for most of my life. But then after that, when we realized that, you know, we didn't have the Soviet Union to look up to anymore and the world wasn't anymore the left versus the right in that sense, then all of a sudden we ran out of big ideas and we ran out of steam and we became whiners and somehow we just can't get it up anymore. And I think that for us to really win some of those big battles that lie ahead, I think that we have to come up with a whole different kind of politics that is not embedded in the old left-right politics of the Soviet era, and a lot of us just have to pull our head out of the sand.
All right. Well, we're talking to Kali Lassen, the editor and founder of Adbusters magazine, today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're going to take a short break now to go to a weather report, because we have a weather situation here in East Central Illinois.
A severe thunderstorm watch is in effect until 5 p.m. this afternoon for the following counties in the WILL severe weather coverage area: Champaign, Ford, McLean, and Vermilion. Hail to 1.5 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles per hour, and dangerous lightning are possible in these areas. Repeating, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect until 5 p.m. for Champaign, Ford, McLean, and Vermilion counties.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our guest today, Kali Lassen, the editor and founder of Adbusters magazine. We're talking about culture jamming, the movement to arrest the sort of present commercial-crazed, privatized cultural environment in the United States and indeed the world, and what Mr. Lassen and the people at Adbusters are doing to try to address this. If you'd like to call in and ask him a question, the number here at Media Matters, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And we do have a caller. Let's go to the phones. Line 1, Champaign, you're on the air with Kali Lassen.
Yeah, it's Champaign County. But, I was going to ask you about culture jamming, because it's not just a sort of a gerundive, a noun, it's sort of a verb, too. People actually do do culture jamming projects, and I was wondering if you could tell us some of the more inventive ones and how that fits in with your idea of new strategies. But this point that you were just raising about how the left is lost in a lurch because there is no longer a quote-unquote real existing socialism, I actually think that the left, if it can energize, is better off without some distraction like the Soviet Union, which was never a socialism. But
I agree.
I don't want to get too sectarian about that. So why do you say its absence holds us back in some way?
I think that our minds, or many of our minds, are still back there in that era when we believe in government regulation of the economy, and we believe in all those old lefty ideas that were such a high currency in those days, and we're somehow stuck in the past, and we're not able to come up with new strategies and new ideas that actually tackle the big issues of our time. It reminds me a little bit of feminism, where feminism did a wonderful job for many, many years. And it gave rights to women and basically changed the whole social landscape. But then now we have a situation where a lot of young women, they wouldn't be called dead calling themselves feminists. And I feel a little bit the same way about the political left, where I'm, you know, ready to do all kinds of things and ready to launch a culture jamming movement. But I don't want to be called a lefty anymore, because the lefty it just feels like the left is dead.
What, if you could go to the first part of the question, what are some examples of culture jamming, specific things people do besides try to be able to buy ads on TV shows?
Okay, well, one of the most inspiring little things that we pulled off last July the 3rd, one day before July the 4th, we put a call on our website, and we raised $47,000, all in little $50, $100 units. And we bought a full-page ad in the New York Times, and it was quite a nice jam. The when you open it to the page, then it just looks like a financial page of the New York Times, where somebody's taken a big black marker and just scribbled all over it. And on the top half of the page, there's a huge black dot just swirled around there. And underneath it says, July the 4th, because my country has sold its soul to corporate power, because consumerism has become our national religion, because we've forgotten the true meaning of freedom, and because patriotism now means agreeing with the president. I pledge to do my duty and take my country back. And then there's a website there that says unbrandamerica.org. And this is what I call a jam. And this threw a lot of people into cognitive dissonance and made them think about how their country has become a brand over the last couple of generations.
Now, once someone sees that and responds to it and goes to that website, and what do you do next besides raise money for another ad? I mean, where's the next step? What sort of stuff do people do when they want to go to phase two of culture jamming?
Well, I mean, phase two, I mean, there is a next step. There's another ad. We're now trying to buy airtime for a spot that does exactly what I just described, but on television.
Mm-hmm.
Our purpose is to get people involved in the politics of the mental environment and the politics of our culture. And if somebody looks at a strange-looking page in the New York Times, and if that motivates that person to suddenly start taking black dots and using them in various ways through, you know, in their life, and if it motivates them to get involved in trying to perhaps air a spot on their local television or to do something in their campus or in their high school, then I think we're way ahead. We have energized somebody, we've politicized somebody, and we've created another cool activist that can build a movement.
Okay, we're talking to Kali Lassen today, the founder and editor of Adbusters. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Champagne, you're on the air with Kali Lassen.
Hi, this might be a little bit off topic, but I know I've been reading the magazine for a while, and I was wondering, how does Mr. Lassen view the use of GMOs in the third world? And I'm thinking more in terms of their ability to improve crop.
Could you say what GMOs are for our listeners who might not be?
Genetically modified organisms. And I'm thinking of a lot of the African countries and other countries in the third world have problems using heavy-duty pesticides and the whole mechanics of that. And through the use of GMOs, supposedly they can get better crop yields. But I know that Adbusters is pretty much anti-GMO, so I was just wondering what his views on that were.
Yeah, well, GMOs are, of course, one of the topics that we write about a lot in our magazine, and we try to jam some of the corporations that that refuse to label foods and so on. But I think the problem, I mean, the way we culture jammers see the problem, we see there's a bigger problem. It's really a problem of corporations in all areas, whether it's with our nutritional agenda, whether it's our the way our media is run, or whether it's this GMO topic and whether food should be labeled and agricultural subsidies. And I mean, these are all issues where corporations are setting the agendas, and we, the people, are reacting to the agendas that these corporations are setting. So I think that we need to sort of have a larger perspective onslaught against a culture where we, the people, no longer set the agenda. We no longer tell the stories. We no longer sing the songs. All we do is basically react when some corporation has done some dastardly deed.
Caller, do you want to add to that?
Well, I guess my only comment would be that I was quite surprised to realize that a lot of people are not aware that genetically modified wheat has been used in cereal grains for 5-10 years in the States, and
yes.
They're quite shocked when they actually realize that. I mean, I'm aware of it because I went out and I, looked for this information on the internet. But for most people, they have no concept of it here in the States, and I think in Europe you see a completely different perception of it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the point that I made earlier, that we're basically living in a mental environment that is where we get systematically distorted information.
Yeah.
About all issues.
Yeah.
Not just the war or about the, but about pretty well all issues. I mean, our every area of our life, whether it's our food or anything really, it's very distorted information that we make decisions on.
Yeah, but Kali, I think the caller also hits a point, because in your bio and in the Adbusters itself, I mean, genetically modified food is an important issue because there's a strong attachment between the sort of commercialization of agriculture and the commercialization of culture. I mean,
yes.
I think, isn't that the point that you're trying to make?
Yes, well, that's one way of making the point. But I think the big point we're trying to make is that corporations in general, corporate power has now got so strong that civil society can no longer compete. And I think that more of us have to realize that the next 5-10 years is going to be a royal battle between civil society and corporate power, and civil society has to win.
What happens if it doesn't?
Well, then I think we are in for a kind of a... I mean, I see the future as being either where we're in this sort of age of globalization now for the first time in human history, a global culture is gelling all around the world. And that culture can either be a kind of a democratically bottoms-up driven planet Earth where we, the people, call the shots and run the show, or it can be this kind of a Planet Inc., Planet Inc. scenario where the whole planet is run like a corporation and the whole planet becomes a brand. So and to me, this is the sort of world that sends shivers down my spine.
Well, look, we've got a full bank of phone calls here, Kali Lassen, so let's go back to the lines. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air with Kali Lassen.
Yes. I heard you use the expression, unbranding America. And I guess, I'm not sure this is appropriate and goes along with your topic, but it made me think of branding the world, perhaps in more than one sense of the world, the word to brand. But maybe you could speak to the connection between our foreign policy and certain economic policies that are assumed under our foreign policy, at least under the, probably before that, but definitely under the Bush administration.
Mm.
For example, the question of Iraqi oil, it seems that, the Iraqis would be perfectly, this is a simplification, but they would probably go along with their tradition of having a nationalized oil industry. The United States is seemingly trying to say you need to have a privatized one, or you need to have one in which, American companies have, a very strong or maybe even controlling interest. So can you talk about how this idea of branding America goes along with branding the world, and it's not just about economics or about business.
Yes, well, I think that, you know, this great American Revolution that inspired the whole world for a century and more, I think that this revolutionary fervor has come to an end now, and we've reached a point where America has become a kind of a corporate state. I think that corporations with their lawyers and their lobbyists in Washington are the ones that are really influencing public policy and sort of deciding which courses the country should take. And I think it is very, very apt to describe that America has now become a brand, just like Marlboro or McDonald's or General Motors. It's run like a brand, and the bottom line is what counts. And if suddenly the brand or the corporation is running out of oil and the future looks a little dim, then all of a sudden the corporation mobilizes to start a war in Iraq. And I'm not sort of stupid enough to think that was the only reason for going to Iraq, but it was certainly one of the reasons. So we've reached a point now where this great revolutionary example to the rest of the world has degenerated into a corporate brand, and again I just don't know why the American people take that, and I don't know why the rest of the world is taking it either.
We're talking to Collie Lawson today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you'd like to call in, we do have a line open. The number is 333-9455. Our toll-free line is open, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air with Collie Lawson of Adbusters.
Good morning. I wanted to go back to something that was said very early in the program about the difference between selling ideology and selling a product. I seem to think that with some products that are being sold, there's clearly a blend of ideology with the product. And I can give you one quick example in the selling of automobiles. There was a very prominent black artist from the 1960s. She was very radical, and she was leading, you know, pretty much part of the Black Power movement. And now, if you listen very carefully, you can hear her voice selling Chrysler automobiles.
Yeah.
And it's just appalling to me because I'm old enough to remember her from the 60s.
Who is this person, by the way?
Her name is Sonia Sanchez.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And she was a very radical poet in the 60s, and she was, you know, preaching, I thought, some very good messages to the black community. And now, if you know her voice, you can recognize that she's selling Chrysler automobiles.
Yeah.
And what bothers me about that is that, you know, a lot of African Americans can't buy homes, but they will go out and try to, you know, put together every penny they have to buy a huge car. So I just think there's a closer relationship between ideology and some products than what the program has been suggesting so far.
No, I agree with you 100%. The irony in this whole business is that we are being rejected because we're selling ideas, and that's political, and maybe that shouldn't happen. But every ad is also selling ideas as well as products. It's, you know, if the automobile industry spends $35 billion around the world every year telling you how cool a BMW is or some other car, then what they're at the same time selling you is a transportation agenda that depends on cars.
Mm-hmm.
And if the fast food, like if McDonald's spends, I think they spend $1.5 billion a year worldwide telling us how cool their fast food is, I mean, they are not just selling Big Macs, but they are selling a nutritional agenda. That's one of the reasons why we're so fat these days. Every single ad, it's impossible to, you know, in the old days, 30 years ago, maybe there were ads that just sold products.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every ad is selling both an idea and a product.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. It's a very good show.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Let's go back to our phone lines. We're going to go to Urbana again. You're on the air with Collie Lawson. Hello?
Hi.
Yeah.
Collie and Bob, I'm big fans of both of you. It's really great to be on the air with you. I just wanted to talk about, Kelly, you brought up in your book, the Culture Jam, the idea of memes. These are meta themes, you said, and I wanted to ask about the meme out there that's anti-Americanism, and I wanted to ask, maybe, you know, aren't ads in themselves sort of selling the idea of the American media? And any ad that goes to the extent of jamming this media, couldn't that be labeled as anti-American? And therefore, you know, and there's already such this meme out there that is anti-Americanism is terrorism. You know, how do you get away from that?
I must admit, I don't quite understand the question.
Well, I think if I can paraphrase it for the caller, that that by being critical of the United States, is that being can be framed as being pro-terrorist, since that is now the sort of the duality of the world as the United States frames it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, as I said, if for me, going against the current Bush administration is exactly the same as going against, you know, Philip Morris or General Motors, because I don't like the way they're running the show. You know, once a country has become a brand, then it's maybe time occasionally just to criticize it for what it's done.
I agree, but I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But these brands are so associated with America in Americans' minds that
yes.
criticize those brands to a lot of people is, in fact, anti-American and therefore terrorist. And so, I mean...
America has to get used to that because, you know, there was 5 billion people around the planet who didn't like the way President Bush started this war without the United Nations backing. So there were 5 billion people, that's most of 80% of humanity, that was against this war. And now I think that for the next many, many years, there's going to be this latent anti-Americanism that you'll have to deal with.
You know, I think the caller is touching on a really important point, too, that even goes beyond the Iraq War, which is, you know, how much is the sort of commercial culture and branding, how much is that, can that be equated with Americanism? How much is that a U.S. phenomenon? Is there a U.S. life and culture and existence independent of corporate branding?
Well, I definitely think there is, yes. I mean, when I actually travel to the United States and start meeting people and seeing what they're up to and talking at campuses and so on, then I find that my feeling is that there's a good 20, maybe 25 or even perhaps even 30% of the people who feel exactly like I do. They don't like what's going on, and then they're trying their very best to sort of unbrand their country and start doing the right thing again. So there's definitely I think that's one of the great things about America is that sure, it became a brand and it's done all these dastardly deeds over the next while, but it still has the power within itself to be the only country in the world that actually can still turn the tide and allow us eventually to create a planet Earth rather than a planet Inc.
Caller, do you have any more questions or comments?
Well, I guess, you know, you talked about the people all around the world that are against this, but you talked about also the 80% of people in America that were for the war in Iraq. So how do you get people in America to be exposed to these people around the world to see that they're people too? I mean, you could call it a fundamental nationalism or racism or any, you know, what have you. You know, but how do you get that idea out into the American consciousness? Through just ads that's going to be followed by a Philip Morris ad, that's going to be followed by a Coca-Cola ad. You know, how do you do that?
Well, we have launched a culture jamming movement. There are now 80,000 people who have signed up, worldwide as part of this movement. We have a magazine with a circulation of 125,000. We have a website where 10,000-15,000 people a day go there. We occasionally do an ad in the New York Times. We're constantly trying to get on the air. We'll be putting this black dot spot on CNN over the next few weeks. I mean, all you can really do is just keep jamming. I mean, there is no magic formula here. You just have to keep your passion up and you know, perhaps jump over the dead body of the left and still, you know, start thinking differently about what what this new movement will be all about, and just keep doing it. That's the only way.
Well, maybe I can follow up on this to get to where the caller is going, I hope. I mean, who are, outside of the group, your own group, I mean, who are your allies in the world? I mean, what other organizations do you see yourselves saying, hey, these people really have a good idea how to do things? These are the sort of people who are really heading in the right direction.
Well, I should tell you that ad in the New York Times, 90% of it was paid for by Americans who sent in their $50 and $100. So this is not some sort of a foreign venture that raised that $47,000 and put it in the New York Times. But we are in touch with just about every environmental and a media activist group around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We go to as many of the conferences as we can. We have a very strong connection with the artistic and the design community, and we're trying to recruit as many designers and artists, you know, into this movement, because we believe that that visuals, you know, rather than text, is going to be what drives this next revolution. And you know, we are, I think, ever since the battle in Seattle, culture jamming and media democracy and the mental environmental movement, you know, we have become one of the hubs of this this worldwide movement that is fighting against Planet Inc.
All right. Well, we're talking to Kali Lawson today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We do have time to take another call or two if people are interested. The number here is 333-9455, the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Kali, we've talked a lot about Buy Nothing Day, and we haven't really had a chance to explain it. What is Buy Nothing Day?
Well, Buy Nothing Day is something we launched back in about 11 years ago now, and it was actually our first social marketing campaign, which, you know, we were sort of trying to speak back against consumer culture, and we figured that that Buy Nothing Day, that those three words had a kind of a magical ring to them, because when we mentioned that to anybody, that just always threw them for a total loop, and they said, what do you mean, Buy Nothing Day? And it basically opens up that whole can of worms, that whole debate about sustainable consumption. We're basically asking, you know, why is it that that we here in the rich countries of the world, if you add up America and Canada and Australia and Europe and Japan, then we are 20% of the people in the world, and yet we are consuming over 80% of the world's resources, and we're also spewing out over 80% of the world's toxic substances. So we the rich people of the world have to start thinking about how much is enough. And that is the purpose of Buy Nothing Day, is to give the rich countries of the world, the rich people of the world, sort of a reality check and ask them, you know, how much do they want before they get happy?
Is it the same day every year?
It is always the day after Thanksgiving in the United States.
And isn't that historically the day, the biggest shopping day of the year?
Yes, it is, yes. And we did that on purpose because on this you know, right after Thanksgiving, at the beginning of the Christmas shopping season, I think that is the perfect moment for a reality check.
How successful has it been, do you know?
It's been wildly successful. It's the biggest. In
you
fact,
better watch it. George Bush will accuse you for tanking our economy.
Well, I hope so. And this Buy Nothing Day started off real tiny here in the Pacific Northwest, and over the last 11 years, it's grown into a... Last year, 65 countries around the world had all kinds of carnivals and culture jamming events and marches and bicycle rides and all kinds of weird and wonderful kind of carnival events happened all around the world. We estimated that millions of people participated, and tens of millions of people actually, you know, saw an ad on TV or heard an interview on radio or somehow we're confronted with that that question of, you know, is it possible for them to actually stop consuming for 24 hours to go on a consumer fast and has their lives deteriorated to the point where they can't even handle that?
And then there's another similar sort of event that I see sponsored by Adbusters, TV Turnoff Week. What's that?
Yeah, TV Turnoff Week was our very first attempt back in 1993 to launch this, this sort of a media activist awareness campaign, and it was basically at that stage, and even now it's grown quite large, and many other groups around the world have taken it up, including the U.S. and Australia and Holland and the U.K. And it's kind of a campaign. When you try to switch off your TV for a week, 80% of the people give up on the first day, and people are literally addicted to their TV sets to the point where they start sweating like you know, as if they were coming off heroin or tobacco or something when they switch off the TV set. So that was the first attempt to get people involved in the politics of the mental environment, just to point out how addicted they are to the tube.
And has that been as successful as Buy Nothing Day, to your knowledge?
Not quite. But I have a feeling that now that Buy Nothing Day is becoming a little mainstream now, it's starting to feel a little bit like Earth Day or something. But I believe that TV Turnoff Week, with all its other political implications, and of course many people now, they don't just switch off their TV, but that week is also a week for launching campaigns against media monopoly and basically get people talking about how come that we've reached a point where half a dozen huge companies are now controlling half of all our information flows, and we're now more and more we're getting into the more interesting part of the politics of the mental environment, and I think that as the media democracy movement grows, as the mental environmental movement grows, TV Turnoff Week will become sort of one of the weeks every year when we media activists get together and celebrate.
Now, we've only got a minute or two left. Maybe you could just tell our listeners, Kali Lawson, I mean, what do you think, someone listening to the show right now wants to get involved, they want to be a culture jammer, aside from like forking out money to pay for an ad in the New York Times, I mean, what should they do? What sort of steps could a person who's interested in this issue pursue?
Well, I mean, it depends what stage you're at. If you're already
Let's say they're a beginner.
They're a beginner. Well, in that case, read some books, visit some websites,
Let's say they're smart beginners. They've read the books. They've been to the websites. They're ready to act. They want to get involved. What would be something, what would you recommend steps they might want to consider taking?
Okay, I would recommend that after reading all the books and doing all the homework, that they pull off one single little piece of direct action in their lives. That means actually doing something like putting a black dot on somebody's window or jamming a supermarket item that's owned by Philip Morris or Altria.
How do you jam a supermarket item?
You just put a black dot on it, or you put a little label on it saying that this food item was created by a tobacco company. Or you just give vent to your rage. If you feel a rage about something, then you find the courage to do something about it. This is a very difficult step for most people to take, because most of us, and that's why I criticize lefties so strongly, is because most of us, that's all we ever do, is just read books and talk. And when it comes to direct action, then we just don't have it anymore.
And where does what's the next stage after you've put your dot on the Philip Morris food product? I mean, where do you go from there? Where do you envision the next stage? Because obviously, we've got to go one step further to actually change the world and change the power relations. Where's the next stage after that?
Well, there are probably half a dozen or more really huge areas, and GMOs obviously is one of them, the food area, and just environmental activism is another area. For me, the one that excites me the most is media activism, and I think, if you're...
Well, that's why you're on this show, Kali
Lawson. That's why I'm on this show, and that's why I'm going to that conference, this December, and that's why I'm taking out the ads in the New York Times, and there are...
Kali, I've got to thank you for being our guest. The band's tuning up, which means it's time for us to get off the air, or out of the studio, at least. The station will stay on. Kali Lawson, thank you very much for joining us today on Media Matters. And we'll be back 1 week from today with our guest, John Stauber, talking about weapons of mass deception, his new book. I'd like to thank Kumi Silva, who's been our producer the last couple of months and done a phenomenal job. This is her last day on the job. See you next week.